back on Downtown. It's 4:30 here on this Tuesday afternoon. And as always, round about this time on Tuesday, our opportunity to talk a little basketball with our friend John Corrales of Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast. Hey there, John.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Not too bad. How has it been adjusting post-vacation?
It's been a slow reacclimation. You don't want to dive back into things too quickly. You can get hurt. You can get the bends.
So you want
to just ease your way back. It's probably like a 3-week kind of buffer to get back into things. So, yeah, it was good.
I like that approach. I should try that at school. I'm going to tell students tomorrow, look, I'm not at 100% yet because it's not even a full week here.
You can't ramp up, man. You can't go playoff speed right away. I mean, that's how you get hurt.
Right. I'm setting myself up for a muscle pull if I do that.
That's right.
Well, let's see. Let's talk about what's going on. Still kind of a slow time, but a few developments. What do we think of Lonnie Walker IV and what he might do?
Yeah, it's an interesting signing. And it's first of all, a complete no-risk signing, because it's fully non-guaranteed contract. It's an Exhibit 10 contract, which we kind of call a training camp deal, because typically guys sign that to specifically kind of get cut and go to the G League. But it is not a deal that is only for training camp. It's a full one-year guarantee, non-guaranteed deal. So it's possible that he will stick around. So the gamut for him runs from training camp cuts and G League time to a rotation spot where he challenges for a spot off the bench and gets spot starts. So I can't imagine a wider array of possibilities for the guy. He's a proven player. He's a proven, he has proven ability to score the ball. He's inconsistent. He's a little streaky. His defense is up and down. When he's at his best, he looks like he's a real contributor. When he's at his worst, he looks like a guy that's like, okay, why is he even on the floor? So I think the Celtics are going to give him an honest look and see if he can accept what's happening, accept what's, the possibility of not playing certain games. See if he can grasp what the Celtics are trying to do to complicate a defensive scheme, and can he be more of a spot-up guy rather than a guy who goes for his own when he's out there. So if he can do all that, if he can understand that some days he'll play 25 minutes and some days he'll play zero, and some days he'll, most of the time he's going to have to stand in the corner, and can he do that and stay engaged? If he can do all that stuff, then there's a real good chance that he could be a contributor on this team and fight for minutes, as the eighth man with maybe Jaden Springer. But if he can't, then he'll get cut and he'll either go to the G League or he'll try to hook on somewhere else.
And that's some very interesting comments from Jason Tatum as he talked about the whole Olympic experience. And I don't know, reading that, seeing what he had to say, I saw as a pretty good sign of a level of maturity that we've been waiting for from Tatum.
Yeah, and he's never been a kind of like hothead kind of guy. So he's definitely the epitome of never too high, never too low type of player. But yeah, he talked about, he wasn't mad at the world considering what happened. And, that's good, right? He's processing it. He said he's going to learn from it, and he's not even sure what the lesson is at this point, but there will be a lesson in there somewhere that will show up. And that's good. And he understands that after ring night, one last look back, you get your championship ring, the banner goes up. After that, you got to turn the page and look ahead to game two, and you get back into that mode of the game that just ended doesn't matter anymore except for the film session the next day, and then you just keep plugging along and trying to get to the ultimate goal again, and trying to have this summer experience all over again.
John Corrales with us here on Downtown. It's been a fairly quiet off season for the Celtics as they essentially kept most of the roster from last year. But as you look around the league, what's been, from your perspective, the biggest offseason move that any team has made?
Well, biggest offseason move from any team, I think, you know, Paul George going to Philadelphia is probably the one that stands out the most. Although OKC, if you just take their summer as a whole, getting Hartenstein and Caruso fills so many gaps, fills like real necessary things for them, that they are up there as far as having a great offseason. But the biggest single move has to be Paul George going to Philadelphia, because that allows Philly to have theoretically two stars on the floor at all times with Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. And you can give Joel Embiid some days off here and there, and you can give Paul George some days off here and there. And Maxey's a pretty durable guy, I think. And he, you know, I think you can see the long-term plan there, and you know, hope their hope that Paul George can be what Tobias Harris never was. I mean, the price they paid is significantly higher, but yeah, I think that's probably the single biggest move.
Hey, you've tweeted recently a few times about the WNBA, and I wanted to get your perspective on this. It's taken a while for people to catch on. Obviously, you know, the Caitlin Clark signing has opened some eyes, but what do you think it is that's really kept the league from rising to a level of prominence that I think it belongs at? Because when you watch those games, if you're a fan of good fundamentals, man, the WNBA is full of that. They play some good basketball.
Yeah, well, I think any league is going to have difficulties to start. So we'll start there. Any new league is going to face traction issues. Like you look at the whatever that new version of the USFL/XFL, like you think, you know, in any summer football league, say football is the most popular sport in America. Why doesn't a summer football league just catch on? Because people can just keep watching football. And it doesn't matter. There's always going to be some difficulty with a new league. And then, you know, unfortunately, it's women's sports that have especially difficult traction outside of women's soccer, right? Like women's soccer seems to be the exception. But women's basketball has now kind of broken through. It's almost like the scene in Castaway where Tom Hanks finally gets that big piece of plastic and he can't break over the waves, right? And then finally he gets that big piece of plastic and it pushes him over the waves and he escapes. That's kind of what the past couple of seasons have been for the WNBA. Like they finally have broken through this crashing wave after wave after wave of people having a tough time accepting women's sports. And it's a different brand of basketball. And it's almost, I think, worked against the league to be called the WNBA because people say, well, it's the WNBA, but it doesn't look like the NBA. And it never will because Jaylen Brown can take a guy off the dribble, cross over, go left, one dribble, and then dunk over somebody. You're like, wow, what a play. And that's just not happening in the WNBA. And the way you score in the WNBA, even with elite athletes at that level, has to be more of a team concept, has to be a lot more passing, cutting, moving without the ball, all of that stuff. And somebody like me and you and people who just enjoy high-quality basketball, that stuff is amazing. And if I'm teaching a middle school age boy how to play basketball, I'll show him WNBA games before I'm showing him any NBA games because those WNBA games are much more fundamentally sound. And yes, somebody like Caitlin Clark is making spectacular passes, but the passes are set up. You can look at how did she set up this passing lane and how did the pick kind of free her up to do something, and how did that occupy the defense, and then the backdoor cut and all of that stuff. You can kind of tie it all together. Whereas, like I said, in the NBA, there's so much individual stuff that younger boys especially think, oh, well, I'm just going to try to do the spectacular thing versus doing the team thing. And I think the way you get to spectacular is through good fundamentals. So I think it's taken a while because the WNBA hasn't, you know, the level of athleticism doesn't rise to NBA level, but I think people are starting to appreciate now that the level of execution, I think, over the course of an entire game, the women execute better than the men on a general basis. If I were to look for an entire season, a full scope of every game, I'd say a higher percentage of a WNBA game is good basketball execution versus men, where it's, yes, there's some good basketball execution, but there's also steals and somebody who just runs faster or jumps higher or does a super athletic thing. It's two different styles of things, and people want one and all the highlights, and they don't see all those highlights in the other thing, and they say, well, that's worse. It's not worse. It's different. And so I'm glad that people are coming around. That might be the longest answer I've ever given you, but I think that's why people are starting to come around to the WNBA. They're appreciating that. And also, this is the best the players have ever been. It's a lot of really, really great basketball players, and you're seeing some incredible shot making, and it really is a lot of fun to watch.
I think you're right on all counts. I love watching people move without the ball on offense and help on defense. What a concept.
I know, right? Everybody has to work together. It's really a lot of fun.
John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, Locked On Celtics podcast. Appreciate it as always, John. Have a good week, and we'll check in with you next Tuesday.
You got it. I'll talk to you then.